are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and that is Makana finishing up the homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show. Makana played here last night at the A Kanikapila Kako program. I think everybody was so happy that there was absolutely no room to come in, and he's been doing some great activism, and so a man after our hearts. Today, our show is going to be about criminal justice, and we have Chief Prosecutor Justin Kohler in the studio with us, and Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store and Bikram Yoga Kauai.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Bikram Yoga Kauai, located in Kapa'a, provides authentic Bikram Yoga. A 90-minute beginner's series is practiced in a heated studio with newly remodeled hot showers and changing rooms. All levels welcome. Improves physical health and overall well-being. Boutique open and classes available 7 days a week. KauaiBikramYoga.com or 823-9642.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to KKCR.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii, 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Ann Randolph presents an encore performance of her new production, Inappropriate in All the Right Ways, as a fundraiser for KKCR, Thursday, February 25th at 7 p.m. at the Church of the Pacific in Princeville. A wildly entertaining, fun-filled evening, rated R. Tickets available at kkcr.org or brownpapertickets.com. Limited reserve seating, $50. Open seating, $25. Proceeds will benefit Kauai Community Radio.
Hi, this is Ann Randolph. Come enjoy the show and support Kauai Community Radio.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Justin?
Good afternoon.
Oops,
Felicia.
I got a gun. Maybe I don't have you right there. Right, let's try again.
Good afternoon, Felicia.
Right on. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in. You've been in now maybe four shows, I think?
I think this might be number five or number six even.
Something like that. I really appreciate it. And
I enjoy it.
Great. And I normally start off saying I represent the defense. And while that is true, I just have to expose my bias. And that is, I think that the trend line is in a direction that I'm happy with. So,
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I want to thank you for doing a conscientious job, and it's like being chief prosecutor. That's a really rough position to have, and so it's
rewarding as well.
Great, and honestly not a job I'd want to have. So it's good, and I want to also congratulate you on your new angel baby, Owen.
Thank you.
And he's, 2 months now?
He's coming up on 7 weeks, and he's just as adorable as can be.
Well, wonderful, and congratulations.
Thanks.
So, kind of getting right to the point, I actually sent you a list of questions, but you don't have to have it. I have it, but I gave you some ideas of some of the things I
spent some time reviewing it.
Okay, good. So, I am happy that serious crimes seem to be one of the things that you have been addressing. And I gave you a little bit of homework here. I want to just start with murder and violent crimes. Do you have any numbers on, like, how many have gone to court or received convictions during your time? And also, what is typical in Kauai's past?
Well, we just started tracking in the last couple of years. We put a system in at our office that allows us to really track the different types of incidents that are coming into our office and different types of dispositions that are going out. And so actually from 2014 to 2015, we did see a decrease in the number of violent crimes that came into the office, somewhere on the magnitude of about 10%. In 2014, we got about 330 what we categorize as persons crimes, and that would be basically non-domestic violence, violent crimes in terms of assaults. And then in 2015, 295 incidents reported to our office. So that is a slight decrease, and our family abuse cases, which is the great bulk of the violent crime that occurs on the island, is our domestic violence.
So that's more than the 290?
Correct. That's another about 300 per year, just in terms of the family abuse misdemeanor cases.
So are they, when it's a misdemeanor, if they did very harsh harm to somebody, if somebody was beaten pretty hard, then that wouldn't be a misdemeanor. Is that correct?
Well, hang on. I got the numbers now right here. In family adult in 2015, 380 cases referred to our office versus 448 in calendar 2014. Misdemeanor domestic violence cases would be situations where intimate partners of a particular type or people who live in the same household, one inflicts bodily injury on the other. And bodily injury, as defined for purposes of the law, is any pain whatsoever. So it could be somebody slaps somebody and it hurts. That would qualify.
Okay. So it seems that what I remember is that up until very, very recently, like maybe at the very end, the last prosecutor's time in office, we really didn't have convictions on murder.
Well, we're fortunate in that we have very few murders. I mean, historically speaking, you know, if we have one or two in a year, that's a high year for us. And, you know, there are a lot of, or not a lot, there's a large number of unsolved homicides and suspicious missing persons cases tied to Kauai. Going back, as far as we can keep track, back until 1974 is the oldest one we have. And that adds up to just under 30 cases, depending on how you look at it. In terms of our murders over the last few years, the murder cases tend to be, sadly, again, domestic violence-related situations, drugs and alcohol generally involved. There's very little in terms of stranger-on-stranger crime on Kauai, in terms of violent crime anyway. The stranger-on-stranger crime that we see here is property thefts, residential burglaries or car break-ins, things like that. The person's crimes, the violent crimes, tend to generally be folks who know each other.
And so I just happened to see Friday's papers. So there's, you know, an attempted murder that was found not guilty, and then a man indicted on a murder charge. So odd to have two things like that in one day, one week.
Yeah, it's been a busy month for us.
And so in the one that was found not guilty, that maybe it appeared that it was that the person that was being... can you talk about it?
Sure. I mean, the case is gone to trial, and it's been concluded. And, you know, the defense, there were basically two defenses raised at trial, and one of them was an insanity defense, and the other one was a self-defense defense. And the one that the, you know, as near as we can tell, the jury bit on the self-defense claim and said, you know, this is essentially, he said, we weren't out there, we don't know what happened, and so it's going to be a wash for us. That's what it appeared to be.
Okay, and just for the listener, in this first hour, I'm kind of trying to focus mostly on Kauai cases, and then we can adapt to whatever we need to, but then to be able to philosophize a little bit broader, because I have so many ideas that come with this. Let me ask you before I sit there and keep beating down my list of questions, if there's a message that you would like to bring out.
Well, in the 3+ years since since my administration has been in the office, we have tried with all of our heart and all of our soul to build an office that does reflect our community values and also does reflect the prosecutor's motto, which is to seek justice and not just seek a conviction. What we learn as prosecutors is that we do the right thing to the right person at the right time for the right reason. And, you know, I always tell people that we are blessed as prosecutors because we have a very simple job description. It's just to do the right thing. We're the only lawyers that our job description is just to do the right thing. We don't have to argue about billable hours. We don't have to argue about other people's money. We get up every day, we come to work, and we try to do the right thing. And that's what I tell my staff. Last weekend, or actually towards the end of last week, we were really fortunate in that Peter Carlisle, who was the prosecutor in Honolulu for many years, came over with Frank Rothschild and did a really excellent half day of prosecutorial ethics training in our office, along with former Kauai prosecutor Craig DaCosta. And just to have somebody like Peter Carlisle and Frank Rothschild just spending hours sitting down with our team of attorneys, you know, inculcating in them those values of what makes prosecution work good and what makes good prosecutors, really epitomized what I want to accomplish with the office.
And what does inculcated mean?
To build in them that sense of values.
Okay. Yeah, well, I like hearing that because I like what you just said there about seeking justice, not just conviction, because not always everybody's guilty. And Kauai has had like a 99-98% conviction rate. Sometimes that makes me nervous to see that, because that to me that says if you're accused, you're guilty, or is that you only go to trial if there is a lot of compelling evidence?
It depends. It depends who you ask. And you can make the numbers say pretty much anything you want them to say, depending on how you massage them. And that's why historically, you know, the National District Attorneys Association did a pretty good monograph on this about 10 years ago. And they said, listen, conviction rates are one interesting metric that you can use to kind of measure where your office is at. But it's by no means a measure of your office's effectiveness or a measure of your office's quality, because, you know, conviction rates can be affected by all kinds of different factors, none of which have anything necessarily to do with the quality of the work being done by the office. So it's, you know, it can mean that if you have a 99% conviction rate, it could mean you're either really great, you're an awesome prosecutor, and you never lose. But I don't trust lawyers that tell me they never lose, because it tells me they're not taking the hard cases, or they're doing something else. But yeah, it's one thing, it's a helpful thing, it's an interesting thing, but it's not the measure of an office's effectiveness. There's all sorts of other information that you have to look at.
Well, one thing when I think about what is justice, I think about a lot of people get in trouble for crimes of poverty. And by this I don't mean stealing something. I mean they don't have enough money to get the safety sticker on their car. You know, there's insurance expired, something like that. They don't have a home. They're sleeping in the wrong place. There seems to be a downward spiral when people don't have housing, or you know, they have a challenge like that. And so I don't see how adjudicating them for being poor necessarily, you know, helps them or anybody else. What are your thoughts on that? And do you see a direction of what's going on our island?
I try to be very mindful of criminal justice trends that tend to criminalize poverty, because, A, you're exactly right. It doesn't get us anywhere. It doesn't solve anything. It doesn't make the community any safer. By the same token, you know, you have to be able to enforce certain standards with regards to, okay, people got to have motor vehicle insurance to drive a car. You've got to have a car that's been evaluated once in a while to see that it's still safe to be on the road. Those things are all valid and reasonable and rationally related to the purpose of, you know, making sure your cars aren't falling apart on the roadway, causing hazardous conditions, or people getting into accidents aren't, you know, ruining other people's financial lives by inflicting injuries that can't be paid for, that kind of stuff. Some of the other things you mentioned, you know, the people sleeping where they aren't supposed to be sleeping, or people who are getting in trouble because maybe they're not taking their medicine or don't have access to the proper mental health services or other situations like that. You know, we try to be very mindful of those cases when they come up. And, you know, our goal is always, in cases like that, to figure out if there's something we can do on our end to help this not happen again to the person, essentially. Like, how can we help them get into a situation where they have a driver's license, or how can we help them get into a situation where they are able to make their appointments every week and make their group sessions and take their meds? Because when they're doing that, they're fine. But when they're not, they go out and they steal things from Walmart, and then they get arrested, and then they come into our court, and then we have to figure out what to do with them. So, you know, it's hard on our end because we're not in the prevention side of things. We're kind of, you know, the social workers of last resort when nothing else has worked for these people and they're out committing crimes, you know, and they show up in court and they show up in an orange jumpsuit with handcuffs on, and we got to look at them and say, what is the right outcome here for this person, for society, for the victims in the case, those kinds of things. And so, you know, again, it comes down to making sure that our staff has that value of compassion, because a little compassion goes a long way when you're a prosecutor. There's a time to be compassionate, and there's a time to you know, you got to bring down the hammer sometimes as a prosecutor, but you have a lot more credibility when you do that if you show that you also exercise compassion at the appropriate times. You build credibility with the public. You build the credibility of the whole system and not just of our office when we show that we're focusing its energy on trying to be productive rather than just be reactive or be punitive.
Well, I've seen that you are involved in different legislative activities at the state, and I know that I appreciate that, because without that, sometimes there's not the right pressure to address different. It could be things like even housing. Housing is a big part of, I think, what creates an escalation, a downward cycle into crime. Which policies have you been focused on this year? And which policies have you had focus on in the past that you feel like you've been pleased to be able to have seen?
Well, this year the session right now, the legislative session is in full swing. And, you know, actually today I was at the Capitol testifying in front of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate
today?
Side just this morning. And, you know, one of the things they were considering there that is an important piece of the puzzle for us is every 10 years the legislature convenes a committee to look at and make wholesale kind of bulk revisions to provisions in the penal code, the Hawaii Penal Code, which basically says is your code as to what's a crime. And so every 10 years we get this committee together, and this year Judge Steve Alm was charged with being the chair of it, and it included, you know, prosecutors, public defenders, community group advocates, members of the public, judges, justices, defense attorneys, all sorts of stakeholders. And, you know, we got together and produced a report recommending about 43 different changes to the Hawaii Penal Code. So it's a significant piece of legislation that has the potential to be very far-reaching. So right now that is something that we're focusing on, making sure it gets through the process in a good state and isn't tortured too much during the legislative process. One of the big things that's going on this year is the Hawaii Crime Victim Bill of Rights, also known as Marcy's Law. Hawaii is one of 18 states that does not have crime victim rights built into its state constitution, And I think this year is going to be the year that we change that. It's been an effort that's been ongoing for over a decade, actually. People like Pam Ferguson Bray at the Crime Victim Compensation Commission and our current Attorney General, Doug Chin, folks who have been involved in that struggle for a long time to elevate the rights of crime victims into a constitutional plateau.
Can you give us an example?
The rights to receive information about their case, the right to have input into plea bargaining processes, the right to receive timely restitution, the right to participate and make statements at sentencing hearings, things like that. Basically, the right to receive information and participate in the process.
I like that. What's the name of the bill?
It's called Marcy's Law, M-A-R-S-Y.
Is it House Bill or...
House bill, I'll look that up
Senate
here.
Senate bill, because then people can...
There's one on the House side and there's one on the Senate side. If you Google Marcy's Law for Hawaii, it'll...
Okay, Marshall will do that.
Yeah.
Marcy's Law.
And they've got a pretty active Facebook presence. They've been doing a lot with targeted Facebook posting. So that's something we've been very active in promoting over the years. And this year, the stars appear to have been lined up better than at any point I can remember in the past, and I think we stand a chance at getting this thing on the ballot come this fall. So that would be a major step forward for the rights of crime victims in Hawaii. And so that's an important one for us. We've supported it for a number of years, and we're dedicated to pushing that one across the finish line this year.
Yes, because very often there'll be a bill and it doesn't quite make it. Then the next year it comes again and again and again. Sometimes it eventually makes it. So if people do put something in and it doesn't get the traction the first time around.
Yeah, exactly. It can be a multi-year process. Last year the law enforcement community had a few concerns about some of the technical language that was included in the language of the bill. And so this year... The legislators involved, and I have to give a lot of credit to Judiciary Chairman Carl Rhodes and Senate Judiciary Chairman Gilkeith Agaron for really making some thoughtful efforts at putting something forward that is going to address pretty much everyone's concerns. And I think this year we've just about got it. So
that's Senate Bill 3034.
3034, yeah.
And do you see the matching House bill right there? He's probably looking at capital.hawaii.gov, and that's capital with an O-L, and usually there's right in there it'll say companion bill, and it'll have a House bill number.
I'll need a minute.
Okay. All right. And then I saw that you have another...
HB 2120 is the companion bill.
HB 2120. So, because in here a lot of people will listen in, and so that sounds like a bill I would like to support. So,
yeah, and it's on for decision making in Senate Ways and Means tomorrow. So they're not going to be taking any live testimony at that hearing tomorrow, but we did put in written testimony, as we do on many criminal justice subjects. And so... Hopefully Ways and Means will pass it out tomorrow, and it'll move on to the next step.
Yes, so that means if people are interested in supporting that or opposing that, they could go to capital.hawaii.gov, and then they put in HB 2120 or SB 3034 under status measure, and it pulls it up. And it's really a great system. If
yeah.
you're not already logged in, you need to create a login, but... we are so lucky in Hawaii to have this great package for helping with legislation.
Yeah, one of the things that our legislature really did right is make the is make it very accessible to see what bills are out there, to see when they're being heard, and to submit at least in writing testimony to be able to participate in the process. And I do want to credit our legislative delegation from Kauai, because we've worked really well with them over the past 3 years. They've always been incredibly responsive and supportive of the things we've tried to do in terms of some of the changes we were able to make to our state's domestic violence laws over the past several years.
And speaking of domestic violence, I know it's a case that's still out, so I won't go deep into it, but there was a violent situation where the child of the unborn child was killed as a result of some domestic violence with a knife. Are you able to speak to legislation that is underway for that?
Yeah, I can't talk about that case because it's pending litigation, but we did introduce a bill this year that would potentially allow charges to be brought in a situation where a person attacks a pregnant person and causes the baby to be born and then die as a result of that conduct. It's, you know, it's frankly pretty unlikely that that bill's going to go anywhere this year because it does touch on some pretty sensitive areas.
Mm-hmm.
And
it is. It's complicated.
There's going to be a lot of vetting and a lot of conversation that goes into that. But it's important that we at least get that conversation moving. And our Kauai delegation, again, has been very supportive of that process. And we've been working really closely with some of the key stakeholders involved to kind of show them why it is that these folks involved in these domestic violence situations are kind of being left out in the cold a little bit, and maybe there's something we can do to help with the situation.
So is that bill basically deferred, meaning has it been put to sleep for this season?
It has not been scheduled for any hearings as of this point.
Okay. So that if it hasn't been, just giving people a little bit of a civics lesson, we are about halfway through the cycle of the legislative season. So if something hasn't been scheduled by now, it's probably not likely to ever be scheduled. Can. Sometimes things just jump on at the last moment, but there is committee after committee, then it's got to cross over to the other side of the legislature, either from the Senate and the House or back the other way. And so if they're not scheduled, it's a problem. Next week there will be some political education, you know, how to participate in the politics of this season. That will be a bit of a focus at the beginning of the show. So are those the main two ones that you had in the legislature this time?
Well, we introduced three bills in this session, or we asked our representatives to introduce three bills on our behalf this year. The big one was the murder amendment that we just talked about. There was another one that would allow certain victims of property crimes who don't reside on Kauai to testify by closed-circuit video. We're still watching to see if we can get something to happen with that this session. And then there was another one that was kind of a technical amendment that would allow judges to order motorists convicted of certain traffic felonies involving alcohol or drugs, or alcohol actually, to install ignition interlocks in their vehicle rather than simply revoking their driver's license. So that was, and the theory there is that, you know, these people tend to keep driving anyway, so we want them to be doing it safely.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, and our guest in the studio is Chief Prosecutor Justin Kohler. So when we're thinking about a car accident, I know there was an accident in Kilauea a couple of years ago, and one or two of the victims in the accident died, and they were all friends, and it was a senior citizen, and I think that he got a manslaughter charge or something like that. I know it was an incredibly difficult thing that was a reflection of the law. So being the driver of the car and somebody getting hit and dying, would anybody have gotten in trouble for that, or is it because the person was a senior citizen in the car?
Generally, we would not take the age of the driver.
No, the deceased.
Oh, the deceased. There are actually some that wouldn't. The age of the deceased would not affect whether or not to charge. There are some charging enhancements that apply if the person who is hit is
senior,
a vulnerable user essentially, or an older person, and so that wouldn't affect whether or not we file charges, but it could affect the severity of the charge under certain circumstances.
And what did happen with that?
I'm actually not sure which case you're referring to, because there's actually a few that I can think of that kind of fall into that category.
Okay. And, you know, I mean, it's a difficult thing because sometimes in that case, I happen to know that left-hand turn, because I make it all the time, and is it very hard to turn left there?
Yeah.
And I could see when you have, I'm not picking on seniors, but people with maybe diminished reaction, if they somehow blew it, that, you know, just turning left there, there's no easy place to turn left out of Kilauea when there is heavy traffic. And so...
Yeah, that is absolutely correct.
So that is...
And that's something that we take into account. You know, we look at all the factors and circumstances in a case like that and making a decision to charge. In some cases, we look at the investigation that comes in, and we say there's nothing this motorist could have done to avoid this. They did everything they could have done, and so how can we say they were negligent under those circumstances? Then there's other cases where we look at them and say, yes, this amounts to this level of negligence or that level of negligence or possibly even recklessness or intentional conduct as you kind of climb up the ladder of your criminal intents there. So all of that factors into account, and there have been cases where we've had to say, no, there's no case here. I'm sorry. Thank you. This is a fantastic investigation, but there was no crime that occurred.
So one thing that we see on this show and just in the community is this continuum that happens where there's a need to, or there is a prosecution of crimes that are more a reflection on cultural or political issues, and they're part of the sovereignty-occupied nation perspective. And that's a tough one, right? Because what happens is a political issue that really belongs at a higher level ends up being expressed on the street, whether that is somebody standing in protection of an ahu or doing a cultural activity that is, you know, you look at it maybe somehow is breaking a law, or where it's a little bit more bold, like driving with a Kingdom of Hawaii or Hawaii Nation driver's license and license plate if they don't have both. What are your thoughts on that?
I've been consistent in my, basically in the 8 years I've been involved in criminal justice issues here on Kauai, in saying and in, I think, manifesting the philosophy that I do not want to be prosecuting people for purely political conduct or purely issues relating to their rights to self-determination, and whether that's, you know, spiritual, religious, political, etc. If somebody is engaged in an act of nonviolent protest, we may, you know, if the police will go in and make an arrest, which is appropriate, and then the people can go about their business and do what they need to do, and then maybe when the case comes to us, we say, okay, the situation's been addressed. There's nothing more that needs to be done here. There's other situations where it involves, you know, the protection of a natural resource, like, you know, a place like Kalalau Beach or a place like Koke'e or something like that. And then you have the tension of the fact that, you know, folks have their cultural practices they want to engage in, and then you have to look at the impact that has on that area, because you need to have that area, of course, be preserved for future generations, et cetera, et cetera. And so in those cases, you really want to be as sensitive as you can to it, but recognize that, you know, there is that tension there, and that's why we have courts and judges, because it's their job to look at those competing facts and say, this is the answer. And so sometimes it's a helpful exercise. I mean, when we prosecute somebody in a situation like that, it's never, to us, it's not an exercise in vengeance or anything like that. It's you know, we have to get a reading from the court on whether this is protected or not protected, because the law is not entirely clear, or because we only have 50 years of jurisprudence in Hawaii on these things. And so the courts have to answer this question. It hasn't come up before. So, you know, we just try to do our job and do it respectfully, and the rest, you know, the result happens.
This Friday at Wilcox Elementary School, there's going to be a teaching by Dr. Keanu Sai. I think they call the event a Halawai Kuokoa, and that's from 5:30 to 8:30. I'm most likely to be there. A lot of these are very powerful testimonies, and it bases on the illegality of the United States being here in Hawaii. And so for me, I tend to look at things, all right, look at a parallel reality. Because we keep seeing more and more convincing evidence that what happened was not legally correct, or that we weren't taught the right thing, but is still here. Right. So that's
there's a ton of discussion going on about that. And I don't expect it to be settled in my lifetime. But my job is to protect this community. And so that's what I try to do.
When I go to those court cases, because I actually know some of them are listening right now. When I go to those court cases, I'm going to watch, like, how is this really very settled? And usually it's over like a driver's license or a license plate, something like that. And it doesn't seem to be so easy, actually.
Well, it's not. And, you know, we try to make it as uncontentious as possible. But, you know, I think it's valid that people do need to have driver's licenses to be on the roadway. I think there's really good reasons for that. I think there's really good reasons for people to have motor vehicle insurance. And those aren't political in nature. Those are related to people's safety, health, and welfare, which to me is what I gotta have as my priority. And so, you know, I think one day will we get to a point where people are going to recognize, or where the state will recognize driver's licenses from other indigenous groups here in Hawaii. I think that's probably going to happen one day, and when it happens, fine. Or the insurance situation. You know, as long as we know that people are driving around in a way that if they get in an accident, that they're going to be able to take care of whatever damage gets done.
Yeah, the insurance...
That satisfies my political agenda, you know.
Right, right. And today there were arrests outside the Na'iel Puni event. I don't know if you saw that. That is the nation within a nation kind of dialogue that's going on, that's working with the Department of Interior. It's really being quite fought. So that happened over on Oahu. I think there was 8 people arrested. I was pleased to see that since the 30-meter telescope on Mauna Kea arrests, as the court has found that permit was not actually legally obtained, pretty much everybody who has been charged with that has been relieved of a charge of obstruction. Does that sound comfortable to you?
In terms of what?
Like if the court says, you know, that these people weren't permitted to be putting the telescope up there, and the citizens who were standing in protest or in protection saying they don't have a permit and this isn't okay and there's this stuff is going on, you know, it was in...
Well, my understanding of what happened with the criminal cases is that the judge basically, you know, the defense of choice of evils was raised by one of the defendants. I don't know if it was the first case that they had tried. There were basically 2 categories of cases, and the first were the ones that arose under that temporary rule that DLNR tried to put out there regarding access to the mountain, and that rule was held to be invalid, and so of course you can't prosecute anybody under a rule that was never validly promulgated. And then the other situation was the defendant came in and said, you know, basically I was faced with a choice of evils. I either had to break this law or I had to prevent this imminent harm from occurring to this area. And my understanding is that the judge looked at that and said, yeah, you've got a point there, case dismissed. So, you know, that to me is the system working the way it's supposed to work.
Yes. I thank you for that. And then...
And I don't know all the details of those cases, so I you know, I'm not weighing in one way or the other as to whether they should or shouldn't have been prosecuted, mm-hmm. et cetera.
And drug addiction seems to fall along the lines of a lot of our crimes that are happening, and you've basically said that that's continuing. But you said you're having less of that this year?
No. The drug problem on Kauai, and I think everybody pretty much understands this, it's not getting better. It's really bad. We've got a significant problem on this island with crystal methamphetamine abuse. We've got a problem with abuse of opioids and even heroin. The balance, there's always this balance of opioid pills versus heroin. One gets really expensive, so people switch over to the other one until they crack down on that one. And then
so
the
help me with
that,
because I haven't quite fallen into that habit yet. Like you the which are the more expensive? What's more expensive?
What we're seeing is that the pills are getting harder to get, and the pills are getting more expensive. Because,
that's like OxyContin.
Right, OxyContin, things like that. The feds have done have tightened up a lot in terms of how the supply chain on those pills is managed, and that's something that's long overdue. I mean, the United States consumes something like 99% of the world's opioid pain medications. They just don't manage pain like this in other parts of the world. So we've been doing something wrong for a long time in this country. So that's a digression, but the upshot is the feds have been doing a better job of controlling the pills, and so they're getting more expensive, which means you start to see people shipping heroin in to the island again.
So, again, forgive my naivete on this. I should know more when I'm doing this show, but I don't know. I thought you'd get that from a doctor. You get that from a doctor, and doesn't your prescription, your insurance pay for it?
The pills? Mm-hmm. Yes, if you go to a doctor and you know, if you break your leg and you're in the hospital, they're going to give you a prescription for Percocets or whatever they give you, and that's all well and good. The problem is that people who want to be drug dealers, essentially, can figure out how to get sizable prescriptions from unscrupulous medical practitioners.
And then resell it.
And then the medication is diverted and sold on the black market. And
so that's where the price goes up.
That's where it turns into a profit center for these folks.
Okay. And then so as a cheaper alternative, heroin.
Right. And heroin, it's like crystal meth. It doesn't weigh much. It's easy to conceal. It's easy to ship. And, if you send it UPS, FedEx, United States Postal Service, whatever the case may be, yeah, they're going to intercept some of it, but the profit margin is astronomical. So you've got an acceptable margin of loss built into that economic model. And it's depressing, but it's intractable as well.
I'm pausing because I don't know enough about that situation, and it's not easy to fix, right?
It's not easy to fix at all, because it all comes down to, it, especially with crystal methamphetamine, it all comes down to prevention. Once you get a person who has been in the ICE life for a certain amount of time, it is just almost impossible to get them back out of it. Particularly in a small community like ours, where people have their group of peers, they have their support groups, it's very difficult to get away and form a new support group in a community this small. So if you're running with a crowd of people who are into drugs, and you get into drugs, and you decide you want to get out of drugs, first of all, you've got to go to a different island to do a hardcore intensive treatment.
And where can they do that? And is it easy to get in?
On Oahu, it's available, and they take Quest and all those things, so it's something that's doable. But then, folks learn how to live sober. They get a new support system on a different island, and then they come home, and all of a sudden they're back around the same old bad influences and away from the new good influences. So it really, it's got to all be about prevention in terms of helping people never get to that point in their life where they're making that decision to get involved with ICE. And, it comes down to the kids, it comes down to the young people, it comes down to the families. It comes down to people being good parents. It comes down to people being good teachers. It comes down to us having strong social bonds as a community, to where we, look out for each other and take care of each other and give people lives that are so overflowing with potential and positivity that they don't get into doing those things.
So it sounds like it's a physical dependence that is almost irresistible.
It changes the chemistry in the brain. I mean, it literally changes the brain's chemistry on a permanent basis. And very few people that get into an addictive situation with crystal meth or with opiates can ever successfully get out and get back to the point where they are functioning like they were functioning before. It's extraordinarily difficult, and I see success stories, but for every success story I see 10 other people who can't get out of it.
So when I was a young adult here, we had a very thriving alternative agriculture business. It seemed like there was...
Do tell.
...pot everywhere, and people didn't have this problem on that. Do you think that pot can somehow replace that again?
Well,
maybe not for the people who have this problem, or can it? You know, I mean, because that's not so destructive.
Pot does not do to people what crystal meth and heroin and OxyContin do to people. That said, you know, I don't want us to be out raising our young kids to be stoners all the time either.
No, but I mean, like, when I felt like I could have written a master's thesis on seeing the shift.
Right.
Once the pot got rounded up, because that was, they had this Operation Roundup. You might be too young to remember that, but the Reagan era brought in Roundup, and they got rid of all the pot, and that's when these rougher drugs came in. And before
right.
that, it really wasn't so evident.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we all are living with the consequences of that policy shift. So I think we're at a point in our country where there's a consensus in law enforcement that we need to be doing things differently. Criminal justice reform is one of those rare subjects that even in a presidential election year is receiving wide bipartisan support in the U.S. Congress, in state legislatures, including our state legislature. But, you know, there is a real consensus arising that we do need to take a different approach. And, you know, I think that you still have to be very mindful of how you make those changes, because there are unintended consequences. We don't want people driving around on the road high on marijuana with no way for us to figure out what they're doing out there, because it does impair driving, just like alcohol impairs driving. So we want people, again, to be living the kind of lives where they don't need to get into those situations.
Well, shifting things slightly, the body cams for the police officers, I'm very supportive of that. Do you know if they've been installed yet?
They are live. They are being used here on Kauai by the Kauai Police Department. It's an initiative that I do support. I'm glad they're doing it. I think it's pro-transparency, and I think it's something that it's a tool in the law enforcement toolbox. It's not going to be a panacea. It's not going to fix everything. But it, you know, like audio recordings or like cameras, you know, still cameras, it's going to help us know what actually happened in a lot of situations where otherwise we would have had to go on, you know, either eyewitness statements or some other type of recording that's not as faithful.
My hope is that it's better for both the officers and the people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that as soon as you bring a camera into a place, it's going to change the behavior of both parties.
It does, and there are studies that bear that out. It's something that's, you know, been proven. People do tend to behave better when they are being recorded, and, you know, for better or worse in some instances. But people do pay attention, and I think it's going to be something that will help officers do their jobs free from the fear of frivolous claims being made against them, and likewise citizens will be able to hopefully take peace in knowing that, you know, what is happening is being recorded by a neutral and impartial source that just tells the truth and can't be edited, altered, or monkeyed with. So, you know, the logistics of how the cameras get rolled out in police departments across the country is something that, you know, I think has the potential to, again, be one of those real thorny areas. But, you know, if done correctly, I think it's a fantastic option for law enforcement.
Good. We have a caller. Aloha. Thank you for holding.
Hi. Aloha. I would like to just go back to drugs for a second, if
okay.
you don't mind, opiates. And I've been told by a physician that a few years ago, two or three, a lot of physicians from, a number of physicians from all over the island got together to discuss the opiate problem here. And what they came up with was a decision to just basically eliminate opiates. And that's the pretty much the official policy of the Kauai Medical Center and other entities on the island. And there are, you know, they basically, in my opinion, threw out the baby with the bathwater, but just deciding to totally proscribe the use of opiates to pain patients, cancer patients, elderly, and others. So,
so your question is, what is the response on that? What is your question?
My question is, is this really fair to people who have a legitimate pain issue?
Well, you know, that's a conversation that I think occurs between a doctor and their patient. I'm certainly not in a position to make opinions as to appropriate pain management in different types of situations. I know for a fact that doctors on Kauai are still writing prescriptions for oxycodone, OxyContin, and things of that nature. So it's not like they all got together and said, no more, and now all of a sudden it's not available on Kauai, because it is. But I know there is less, there are fewer prescriptions being written, and part of that is because one of the sources who was writing a tremendous quantity of the prescriptions is no longer around. And then actually that's true of two of the big sources. And so, you know, the doctors I know have been making a more conscientious effort in recent years to really scrutinize what they're doing when they're writing these prescriptions. And, you know, I fully support and applaud that effort. But again, yeah, I would never want to put myself between a doctor and their patient in terms of telling them what's appropriate or not appropriate for their medical care. So I think that's really the only way I can answer that.
Okay. I just would like to say that it's apparent to me, at least, that since we had a pain clinic open just over a year ago, that basically doctors are pretty much uniformly just dumping all their pain patients that they can into this clinic. And my experience is that as a cancer patient, that it's impossible to find a doctor to prescribe for me. It's just become totally verboten. And I would, you know, there's no doctor in Kauai Medical Center unless you're, you know, have metastasis of cancer that's incredibly painful. They're not going to write you a prescription. And it's sort of a conspiracy among the doctors to, you know, because they couldn't deal with the opiate problem because of the alleged, the actual improprieties that you mentioned of several doctors that were way over-prescribing, I mean, ridiculously over-prescribing.
And
you know, that it brought the issue to a matter of, because they couldn't deal with this.
Right. Caller, I think I'm going to take this because I'm going to ask a couple questions. You have really poor connection.
Thank you. Well, I guess I just wanted to say in conclusion here that it's not as simple as a prosecutor might be intimating to get relief for pain problems. And that's because of a concerted effort on the part of physicians on this island to deal away with the pain problem by just eliminating it. And I know because I have personal experience therein.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I do have a comment on that because I have seen in a lot of doctor's offices that they have a sign up that says we are no longer dealing with chronic pain issues. And I have spoken, this has been a couple years back, but a number of my friends who are Kupuna and seniors, you know, that they probably in all reality have an addiction. But I have seen their tears and crying and saying, I would rather die than to not have this anymore. And how much pain they're in, and how, you know, and one of them actually got over that. And she's not near as happy anymore, but she just passed the addiction phase. But sometimes I've sat there and I've looked and I'm thinking, okay, you know, this person's in their late 70s, early 80s. They're not driving, you know. If they want to kill themselves as opposed to being able to just manage this, sometimes I'm not a professional on this, but just as the ethics, I think, I don't know what to advise them.
Yeah, again, and I'm not a medical ethicist myself, but I do speak to a number of doctors as part of me doing my job and being aware of what's happening out there and what the trends are. And, you know, I know that to me, the ones that I speak to are being incredibly conscientious about how they're doing what they're doing. And so, you know, again, I think maybe that would be a topic for another day. We could get some doctors in here to really talk about it if you can.
I think that would actually be a really good show, and I'll have to see if I can get patients who are in that difficult space to actually want to come in. I appreciate that the last caller called in and gave that honest opinion. He's certainly not the first one that I have heard that from. You know, where do you see the greatest needs for support from the people in the criminal justice system? Like, you know, people who are out there listening maybe who aren't actually impacted by it. How can they help? A lot of times, unless you're involved in it at one level or another, you don't know what it feels like.
Right. Well, in terms of community support for the criminal justice system, I think, you know, first of all, be mindful and be aware of what's going on in your community. Pay attention to civic issues. Pay attention to political issues. Pay attention to local issues. And pay attention to what's going on in your neighborhoods. Really, I mean, primarily, what makes the community safe isn't the quality of the police work or the quality of the district attorneys or the quality of the courts, the quality of the judges. I mean, those things are all important. But what makes a community a safe community is a community that looks out for itself, neighborhoods that look out for themselves, and neighbors that take care of each other. So,
And I my little piece of recommendation, at least that I follow myself, is when people tell me that they're having a difficult situation with the court or with some violations, I go into court and I get to go in and learn and see what happens. And I will say that the court has gotten kinder.
Yeah, well, I know that, you know, judges are human beings too, and especially the folks who are the judges in our district courts, because, you know, they're dealing with people who have been, in many cases, coming before them for years. They're familiar with their problems. They're familiar with their issues. And they know that just being the hammer nailing down the nail isn't necessarily going to be what fixes every single problem. And again, there's a time and a place for it, but you know, I do see them trying to be as compassionate as they can under most circumstances, and under actually really trying circumstances. They've got tough jobs. They've got people coming in front of them all day long who are in terrible situations or who have in many cases done terrible things, and it's their job to mete out justice over and over and over again. And that's a burden on them, I know. And I see them trying to do that in an ethical and compassionate way.
Mm-hmm. It's I have seen it in the past where I have been stunned and it's been ruthless and people are in there for 3 minutes and boom, they're gone, you know. And I've also seen pretty small issues and people have to go to court 10, 15 times. We're at the top of the hour. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Marshall's in here helping, and Justin Kohler, Chief Prosecutor for Kauai, is the guest. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We have Justin Kohler in the studio with us, and we have a caller on the line. Aloha, thank you so much for holding.
Aloha, thank you. First, I wanted to thank you for this wonderful program and very enlightening listening to our chief prosecutor speaking. Thank you. The question I had is regarding to one of the topics you were discussing about the Hawaiian Kingdom and the cases that are in court. As an observer of these cases, one of the notions that I've been hearing over and over is these people have been asking for the state to show an irrefutable proof that United States actually legally owns Hawaii. Now, as a chief prosecutor and as a representative of the state, what measures have you taken in regard to maybe in your own personal research and also responding to these requests as whether United States actually owns Hawaii legally or not? And what is your own personal view on the matter? Thank you.
Well, my personal view on the matter is that I've reviewed the applicable provisions of the Hawaii Revised Statutes that grant me my authority under the from a delegation from the State Attorney General. I've read the state constitution. I've read about the history of Hawaii, about the history of the County of Kauai. I've read the Kauai Charter, which also talks about what I can do and how I can do it. And so I know there's a political process going on. I know there's a political dialogue going on. I respect that dialogue. But for the time being, I believe we are living in the state of Hawaii. I believe we are living in the County of Kauai. I believe we're part of the United States of America. And my job is to do the best I can to keep our community safe from murderers, drunk drivers, wife beaters, and drug dealers. And so that's what I'm going to keep doing as long as I possibly can. So.
Which is highly appreciated. As a member of this community, I highly appreciate your efforts to keep this community safe. Nonetheless, though, my question is in regard to does the state actually taking any effort to show a refutable proof? I mean, if all is well, then the proof and the presentation of that proof should be of no problem. So my question is the state taking any effort to show that proof? And as a representative of the state, are you personally taking any effort on that matter? Or are you aware of these efforts being done?
Well, first of all, you know, as a person of Caucasian ancestry who's not from this place originally, I try to tread very lightly in opining as to what is and isn't true about the history of this place. I don't think that's my place as somebody who still is really something of an outsider, but I don't offer myself as an expert in that particular subject matter. I've seen the proof that I need to see to make me feel comfortable when I get up in the morning and go to work, that what I'm doing is valid and of a benefit to the community. So that's where I'm at on that particular topic. I know there's a lot of other folks out there who have divergent views on that, and I respect that.
So thank you, caller. Yeah.
Thank you so much. So you personally have no knowledge of anybody in this state that is working to show such proof?
That's not something that is really comes across my particular work area. So yeah.
So if I'm understanding what the caller is saying, and I'm sure you're getting it too, but that it would be probably very helpful to the different courts if somebody did actually work to find that definitive piece of proof, because I noticed that in those court cases, it's usually skirted around though pretty well. I mean, pretty nicely. It's not in a bad way. Thank you, caller.
Thank you so much. And once again, thank you for this beautiful conversation.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Okay, we have another caller. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. Aloha, Justin. It's Chief Robert Bob.
Okay. Can you not be on speakerphone? It really has a bad connection.
Okay, hang on.
Are you there? Okay, we're having trouble hearing you.
Okay, how about
better?
Aloha, Felicia. Chief Robert Bob. Justin, you know, I just have a small thing to say about the jurisdiction. In Oahu, all the courts in Oahu recognizes the Polynesian Kingdom of Aku'i. All of the cases up there has been dropped for lack of jurisdiction. We travel throughout Polynesia, throughout the United States, to the Squamish Nation on our Kingdom ID. Everybody accepts it, PSA. My bank account, First Hawaiian Bank, they accept my Polynesian Kingdom Matui ID. Our driver's insurance company, they allow us with our Polynesian Kingdom Matui ID. Why is the state still suppressing us and not letting us free and giving us our inherent right that we have as free people from the land, that has this right from God to allow to travel the way we want to travel as free people? Why is the county of Kauai still holding us back and holding us down and suppressing us and recognizing Prince Kuhio Day, Kamehameha Day, the Japanese flag, but yet they don't recognize the family and the heirs and the subjects of the kingdom? So I know you knew, and I know your background, and we're all good, but we got to make peace sooner or later.
Well, go ahead, sorry.
The less of genocide we feel we being genocide, because it's just a suppression of the county, only the county of Kauai is doing to us. So why is that?
Well, I can tell you that the county of Kauai is not the only county that is enforcing the law regarding to folks having Hawaii driver's licenses. We're just not the only county that has that position. And we talked about this a little bit earlier. I do believe that one day, as part of the process that's ongoing, I do believe that the State Department of Transportation will eventually come to some sort of agreement with the indigenous people who are of this place to come to an agreement that would allow those types of licenses to be used in place of a valid Hawaii driver's license. I wish that process nothing but success. I wish you, Robert, and your folks, I wish you nothing but success, and I have nothing but good wishes for you. And I look forward to that day when, like you say, there is peace. You know, I think that's going to be a much better day for all of us.
You know, and thank you for that comment, but I drove, my friend has this trucking company called Palisade Trucking Association from Palisade, California, Topanga County. And I've been on truck runs with them and came into truck stops using my United Nations Kingdom of Authority ID. Because I used to have truck license, they issued me mine, which was on top of my old license. So they all recognize this now when I go to truck stops with this international, United Nations international ID. And ours is registered as a passport, and we have served the Kauai Police Department, you guys' office, everything of our paperwork. And every time we have filed something in your court of our paperwork, you guys denied it all and just threw it out. You just deny our paperwork. And yet we have to accept your paperwork and believe in our hearts that, yes, this is the United States. Because they're so badly wrong and mistaken that the lies got to stop. The people need to hear the truth.
So, and Robert?
The truth. And I just thank you guys, you know, for having this, because it's good for everybody to express and understand, and, you know, here it's really good.
So, Chief Robert, thank you for bringing up that important point. I appreciate it.
Well, I'd like, you know, at least have a comment on that, and thank you guys again, Felicia. God bless.
Okay, aloha.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. Can I help you?
You're on KKCR.
Yes, hi. Any good news?
This is Felicia. Amy Goodman's in New York, and she comes on in the
this
morning.
This is Kauai's Amy Goodman.
She comes on in the morning.
Dr. Leonard Horowitz, I'm calling in on behalf of several people in the community that are concerned. We'd like the prosecutor's background on the cases that are currently now. There's many complaints with regard to the corruption in the Kauai Kauai Police Department, the prosecutor's office. I understand there are at least two now grand juries that are about to investigate, in which actually the prosecutor has been named in one of those for concealing crimes, not just simple crimes of street violations or vehicle violations, but murders, drug trafficking, a lot of different things that are taking place that people. In fact, there was a hearing a couple weeks ago on the Big Island where citizens complained, and County Councilwoman Margaret Willie has advanced now hearings into the corruption that goes from the prosecutor's office, both in Kauai and Hilo, and the police departments, particularly in Hilo, to the state level, where the prosecutors in Honolulu and the AG's office in Honolulu are complicit in covering up everything from murder and drug trafficking, serious racketeering, white-collar crime, and we the people are actually really fed up with it. So I'd like to find out what is the position of the prosecutor from Kauai with regard to both the ongoing apparent grand jury investigations, as well as himself being named as part of that.
Well, that's certainly news to me, so thanks for bringing that to my attention. I do appreciate that. I have to say that, you know, we take police corruption very seriously. You know, I have prosecuted police officers. I know my friend Mitch Roth on the Big Island, who is the prosecuting attorney over there, has made very hard decisions with regards to prosecuting police officers. I know that our state attorney general, Doug Chin.
Can you name one of those? Because I'm not aware of that.
The state attorney general, Doug Chin, is a passionate career prosecutor who is probably just about the finest man you could want involved with law enforcement in the state of Hawaii, and his chief criminal justice deputy, Kevin K. Takata, who used to work over here for a little while, is a man with a pure and noble heart. So, you know, those are pretty serious allegations that you raise. And so I'd be curious to, yes, to hear a little bit more about that. But,
I'm very familiar with Mitch Roth. I've met and
Can I ask where you're calling from?
Yes, right now I'm calling from Honolulu, but I'm a resident in Pahoa, Hawaii. My name is Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I work with investigative journalist Sherry Kane. We're victims of white-collar organized crime on the Big Island. We have, for approximately 11 years, been damaged over about $9 million in a land theft and foreclosure fraud, white-collar crime racketeering organization that has been literally wreaking havoc to numerous citizens. There is a large effort on the Big Island at the current time. Citizens are gathering. As I mentioned, we've had a county council hearing on this matter. I understand we'll have additional ones. We're actually fed up with the crime, the organized crime that's operating within the both judicial system as well as the prosecutor's office, not just on the Big Island. This is a statewide issue, and it is coming to forward. It's going to be pretty much right on your desk. And that, you know, we're really not going to stop. There's literally dozens of us now who have organized, and we're becoming very active. And as I mentioned, you have a wonderful, wonderful county councilwoman who's very brave and who's very wise. Her name is Margaret Willie. And Margaret Willie has a tremendous amount of public support and media support. She's passed the ethics bill recently, which does away partly with the nepotism that's ongoing from the mayor's office and Mayor Billy Kanoy on down. We have, again, we have many friends in the Kingdom of Hawaii who are very concerned about the genocide. The issue of genocide is no longer secret. The issue of America's illegal occupation of the Hawaiian Islands is no longer secret. These are issues that are being publicly debated currently in before our legislative representatives, and that, frankly, when you say and you tell this audience that you know these people personally and that they're wonderful and that they're doing their jobs marvelously, well, that's just not what we experience. And, frankly, we've had a number of people who have been in touch with, as I have, the FBI, the DEA, the agents in those organizations likewise know that what's going on in the prosecutor's office, covering up, concealing crimes, such as a leading drug kingpin on the Hamakua Coast who operates an illegal ayahuasca manufacturing and distribution organization that is basically similar to what LSD is, basically soliciting young people to go on to trips to tell them that they're going to see God.
If I can interject just for a second,
yes,
you know, I know that Mitch is a guy who's I'm not just saying, you know, he's a good guy. I like him. We hang out or something like that. I've observed his work for a long time, and he's a guy who's even he's quite a bit farther to the right on the drug issue than I am. So I'm not sure what his particular investment would be in covering that up.
No.
But again, that's an issue that I think you need to address on the Big Island. It's an election year over the year. It's an election year over there. I know Mitch is up for election this year, so maybe you can find someone to...
It has to do with organized crime and people being victimized by white-collar organized crime that is being basically enabled by the willful blindness.
Caller?
This is,
you know what, you're being very vague in the accusations, and so, you know, we've really been allowing you to speak your truth, but when it is so vague, so I'm going to give you like 2 minutes, but it should be specific, particularly for Kauai.
There's an attorney, for example.
Is this for Kauai?
On the Big Island named Paul J. Sulla, Jr., S-U-L-L-A.
Okay, I know him.
Mr. Roth, who was mentioned by your guest, is very much aware of Mr. Sulla's operations.
Sulla
is knows about the fact that he's engaged in foreclosure fraud. That's a specific crime in terms of it was based on forgeries, frauds, extortion. We have all this evidence of actual crime before Mitch Roth and before also the Hawaii Attorney General's office and the Hawaii Attorney General in
Honolulu, who refers then on issues, for example, on the Big Island, and this is not just the Big Island. As I said, we have a double murder happening, investigation happening on Kauai, where the police have been involved in covering up and concealing the evidence. That's one of the grand jury investigations, to my knowledge. Again, I'm an investigative journalist. I work with another investigative journalist. We're on top of these stories.
Okay, so let me say this, because it's really important to me that I am making sure that there's accuracy in things, that this can be another show or when there's, like, because these seem like they're really out of left field.
Well, what specifically sounds like it's out of left field? Aren't you talking about how good a job that the police
well,
are doing?
Well, I know. I'm not actually talking about
why.
I'm not actually talking about how good a job the police are doing. I'm trying to say, you know, like, which murders are these?
There's four murders, to my knowledge, in two grand jury investigations, and I'm not at liberty to give you the names of the victims, but I am able to tell you that there are two grand juries that have been assigned. Let me give you over to investigative journalist Sherry Kane, who's a co-author of mine and a co-investigator.
Actually, the Stahi murder is one of them, and that was committed by an attorney. Actually, two attorneys that were involved in this murder. The man died suddenly. He was found bloodied in his apartment, and all of his money was stolen and put into a trust by this lawyer who actually controlled the trust. She stole the inheritance of the adult children. And basically those two attorneys are Nancy Budd and Catherine Lloyd, who are involved in that. And they're also going to be involved in this grand jury investigation, as well as on the Big Island, Mr. Paul J. Sulla Jr., that Dr. Horowitz just mentioned. He also was involved in the murder of an elderly man. And that elderly man is actually, not being investigated by the people it should be investigated.
Thank you.
So we are actually investigating it ourselves.
Okay. Can you?
We are going to bring forward a grand jury investigation along with.
Thank you for bringing that up.
That's a retired police officer.
Okay. Thank you so much.
I'm familiar with Kauai and the police department of Kauai and the cover-up of this information.
Okay, so I'm going to be careful with this, that when we really bring this out, that we have a lot of full facts, but we've given you like 10 minutes, almost five between.
Yeah, we've given you the name of Margaret Willey. Margaret Willey is going to court on Friday. If you'd like to appear in the Kona court and take pictures and take audio recordings,
and that's going to be in front of Judge Melvin Fugino, and that's for a foreclosure fraud case, or actually. The judges are involved in it, and Margaret's actually put into the case filing. She's a county councilwoman. She's put into the case filing in a very, very diplomatic way that there is fraud upon the court and that there would be incredible injustice if they were to give away a 17-acre piece of property with an inn on it and not ask any questions to the party that's trying to steal it.
So thank you for bringing this out.
On behalf of Mr. Sulla, who is now being investigated from the allegations of him being complicit in the murder and basically moving the money.
Yeah, I'm going to just say thank you because, you know.
All about that case.
So I've kind of potted them down. This sounds like a very strong situation, mostly on Hawaii Island, and then
Well, it sounds like an insulting and slanderous situation. So
So we've potted that
down. So we should move on from there.
Do we have another caller? Okay. Aloha. You take off. All right. So, you know what? We can speak a little bit, though, that is what I think is sometimes important to be able to talk about is, like you said, the prosecutor's office has gone after police behavior. It's always a very difficult situation, but I know that that's a concern that's happened here. And white-collar crime is something that you have had some success on, correct?
Well, you know, we work. That was kind of a lot packed up in that question there. But, I love cops. I don't I'm not out to get cops. You know, I'm not out to get anybody. But when cases come to our attention, we've got to deal with them when they come in. So, you know, it's not a huge part of our caseload, and it's not a huge part of our workload. I mean, I'm not sure. I guess okay. I'm not sure what you're getting
okay.
at.
Okay, and I was a little rattled by the last call. Yeah. I think a question that I have been asked is, if there is an officer or two who tends to be maybe aggressive in the arrests or accelerate the charges, is that something that the prosecutor's office tends to notice and bears in mind when how hard they go after somebody?
Well, we evaluate every case on its merits. And, you know, some officers make more cases than others. That is for a lot of different reasons. People have their reputations in the community, and people's reputations, you know, tend to stick with them wherever they go. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay, we have other holders. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it?
Good.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Oh, well, anyway, you know.
Speak more direct into the phone, though.
I was listening to the other caller while I was on hold. I think I got disconnected. But what he was saying is no secret. We all know get that stuff going on. Now, is it the guys that you guys particularly talking about? I don't know. But obviously, when we get them on video of police officers kicking guys in the face throughout Honolulu, and, you know, we get our share of bad apples. But that's not all I was calling. The reason I'm calling is somewhat similar along the lines of corruption. But I just wanted to start the discussion about Nina Marita running for KIUC board.
Okay, the ballots are out. The ballots are out.
You didn't hear me?
Yes, I said the ballots are out.
Well, she was on, isn't she one of the ones running, or did I read that wrong?
She is one of the ones running.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, that to me, she shouldn't be eligible to run. You know, she obviously has a public corruption case and all of her baggage. And I don't know. That just doesn't, I mean, I don't have much to say. I just wanted to start the discussion. I just don't think she should even be on the ballot, personally. And with that said, I'll follow the discussion. Maybe somebody else feels the same way. I don't know. Maybe you guys differ from me. I don't know.
Okay.
But,
thank you.
Yeah. She shouldn't be on there. Aloha.
Aloha. So, hey, I gave you some homework before. Did you watch any of the? I know you're a busy man. You got a brand new baby. Did you watch any of those videos that I'd sent? There was something called a whole series. It was good. I watched it, actually marathoned it over a weekend. It was called Making a Murderer. Did you see any of that?
I didn't see that, Felicia.
Okay.
And I swear, as soon as I'm finished with Downton Abbey, I will get on to Making a Murderer. But I just couldn't get Owen to sit still and watch it.
No worries. It,
but I'm familiar with the story, and
okay,
I've done some reading about it, and yeah.
It was, you know, these two women were there in that town for 10 years. They started doing this filming for one of their master's degree, and they followed a case, and it is what I think that we're used to be hearing, you know, that can happen is injustice to sometimes African-American people. Or different races. This happened to be an undereducated white man. And, you know, just how the media and just circumstances can cause somebody to look very, very guilty. And, you know, 18 years later, DNA charges exculpate him. I think I sent you another one yesterday of these things in Angola. There was about 5 prisoners, and the last of them is out now.
Yeah, and it's important for us as prosecutors to not be overzealous in how we approach our work. There's a tendency sometimes in our field to get tunnel vision and focus on victory at all costs. And that's, you know, that's one of the things we spent a lot of time talking about in our training last week is how to stay focused on the goal of achieving justice rather than the goal of just achieving a conviction at all costs, because you really do need to guard against that. It's an easy trap to fall into. When you're involved with law enforcement, you can develop an us versus them mentality, whether it's defense attorneys, whether it's judges, whether it's the members of the public, whether it's the defendants, whatever the case may be. And so it's important to maintain a humanistic approach to things. It's important to maintain a culture within your office that enforces you to keep your eye on what the actual prize is rather than just, you know, line them up and put them in prison. Because, you know, you hear these horror stories, and they're real, and there's no way to give somebody their life back once they've spent it wrongfully imprisoned for something they didn't do.
Yeah, and sometimes even 2 or 3 years of being wrongfully adjudicated can cause somebody just financial devastation. It can disrupt their lives. It's difficult, but then do you ignore things? So you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Justin Kohler, Chief Prosecutor for Kauai, is on the air with me. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
I can.
Yes, okay. I'm calling from San Diego. I'm calling in response to the caller, the two callers, actually, that were on the phone about the police corruption, and they were mentioning the, I think they said there were two grand juries involved in an investigation over the police departments and the prosecutors in various counties in Kauai, and I mean in Hawaii. I have a little bit of information for that that's not hearsay.
Okay, and I appreciate that your tone is not quite so antagonistic as the last one, so continue.
That's probably because I'm an outsider in the thing, and I understand that when people are themselves victims, they can get excited, and so I think we all have to appreciate that, and I do. But anyway, one of the grand jury investigations that she was speaking of is basically is probably right now just a rumor, and that's why Mr. Kohler doesn't know about them, but. Judge Seabright of the District Court of Hawaii received a request for a grand jury investigation that was quite extensive on December 11th of 2015. And this affidavit request had over 100 defendants listed on there, many of whom are associates and colleagues of three or four Hawaii prosecutors and police departments. I couldn't tell you for sure the exact amount, but I'm pretty familiar with this case. So that was actually given to the federal grand jury. It's not a circuit court grand jury. January 9th, I believe. So it's a fairly new one, and.
And do you know who did that request come from? Was that from the U.S. attorney in Hawaii? Was that from a member of the public, or was that from somebody
in
the mainland, or do you know?
I can't tell you who signed that.
Because if it was something that was coming from the U.S. attorneys in Honolulu, you probably wouldn't be aware of it.
I don't know. I can't answer that at this point. And
okay.
Even if I could, I probably wouldn't. I don't think it's proper. But I can tell you that the request is in, and it has been reviewed by Judge Seabright, and it has been turned over to the federal grand jury for investigation. And it's quite extensive, and so it's not going to – you're probably not going to hear anything from them for quite a while. Involves multi-states, not just Hawaii. And there are RICO allegations within the governments in Hawaii, one being
Kauai.
Which
means Kauai, racketeering, is that right? RICO is racketeering charges?
That's correct. It goes into money laundering. There's also numerous United States constitutional violations, as well as the U.S. Supreme Court rules governing how to handle criminal cases in court. So I'm not an attorney myself, so if you ask me anything technical, I won't know. But I can verify that part of the information that this lady was talking about.
Okay, so thank you.
Justin now can check into it and find out if he can get any information on it. I know that Mr. Kohler is listed as a defendant on that.
Okay, so that's brand new news to you. Is that correct, Justin?
That's
pretty recent, yes.
I'll keep my ears peeled. Thank you for the heads up.
Okay,
thank you so much. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Holy guacamole. Exciting one today. Anyway, good show. Hi, Justin. Hi, Felicia.
Hi.
I just got a quick question. I just want to back it up just a little bit. At one point, one of your colleagues over in the Big Island, like you're saying, he's a fellow prosecutor like yourself. He had a hard time prosecuting a police officer, and he kind of hesitated and kind of like, I just don't understand why it would be such a hard thing to think about or what the problem would be. Like last time I checked, we all bleed red.
Yeah, you'd have to ask. I'm not sure what case you're referring to, so I wouldn't really be able to have an opinion on why something did or didn't happen with regards to the case. I'm not familiar with what you're referring to. So
it's not a problem or anything. It's just vocal language. Like kind of a hesitant. Like why would it be hard to, if somebody does wrong, they do wrong, right?
Yeah,
and ask a simple question, it's kind of a hesitant.
I think that we were having a hard time understanding what was being said. I know I was. There was a lot of emotion, and it wasn't that clear. So it's hard to respond.
Justin, you do a great job. I respect that.
Thank you.
Just that one little thing is just like kind of like a little bump in the road right there. Boom.
I'm not... something that I said with regards to a case here or something on the Big Island, or I'm a little confused now.
Kauai is just as crazy as the Big Island. We all know that. But just, and you guys all know each other, but it's just like, he had to make some tough decisions. What's the tough decision, That's what I don't understand.
Oh, I'm not referring to any particular case that they handled over there.
Course.
I'm just saying that,
It's like, either did wrong or did good. And if we do wrong, then, we get prosecuted without, hesitation. Think about it for a second, It's like, whoa, I'm all, whoa.
That's
my question, but I think you're doing a great job. I just thought that was just, just a little fumble. I had to think about it.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Thank you guys.
I think what's kind of coming out there is just like people reacting to a sense of surprise. I mean, clearly what was being said in that one call was pretty surprising to hear. And so I know I stumble.
Yeah. Well, it was inflammatory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and then that second caller gave some information that can be looked up, apparently, so that we can look at that. All right. Well, I have a couple other little questions, but I'd like to let you say whatever you want to say.
Well, I always do appreciate the opportunity to come up here. I do enjoy hearing from the folks out there, and even when it gets a little funky, that's just part of my job, is dealing with people who have questions and people who might have concerns or issues with things that are happening in the system, and that's part of what my job is in terms of helping foster an accountable and transparent and responsive criminal justice system here on the island. So I certainly do appreciate that opportunity. I'm very honored to be able to do what I do every day. I do have a sense of great accomplishment when I come home at the end of the day. Even on the hard days, I know that we're out there fighting the good fight. And I get to work with a group of wonderful people, talented attorneys, talented victim witness, advocates, very intelligent investigators, clerks, administrative staff, and the men and women of the Kauai Police Department who The vast, vast majority of them are doing the best they can in a very challenging job. So, you know, I enjoy it. I get a lot out of it. I get a lot out of coming up here and hanging out with you, Felicia, and doing what we do up here. So.
Well, I appreciate that. Have you ever heard of the Bioneers Conference?
Not sure I'm familiar with that.
I went last fall, and it's activism for social justice, environmental justice, indigenous rights. And there was a woman, her name was Fania Davis, and she was just this great speaker, and she's from Oakland, and she does restorative justice, you know, youth restorative justice.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that phrase, restorative justice?
Yes. Yes, I'm familiar with the phrase restorative justice.
She had a really compelling discussion, and she worked in the Oakland school districts. And in her area there, you know, they had, I guess, like the prison system there, they would look at how many third graders they had in Oakland to be anticipating how much people they needed to have space. You know, and sometimes there's like a school-to-prison pipeline. And she had done so much really positive work that was able to help turn this around. And we have a few programs that are working in that direction, right? Like Drug Court and, you know, some of the youth programs?
Drug Court is a great program. Teen Court is a great program. The Fifth Circuit has recently started a Girls Court program, which provides gender-specific programming for at-risk girls. Just graduated the first cohort from that program back in January. Really marvelous program that Judge Trudy Senda is helping to run here on Kauai. You know, we do lose sight of the fact sometimes that we do have it pretty good in a lot of ways on Kauai. And I mean that it's easy for us because of our size to try new things, and we can make changes in the system much more quickly than they can even in a place like Honolulu. If they want to change a major police procedure or a major prosecution procedure over there, it's kind of like turning around a big battleship. Here it's like turning around your Boston Whaler, you know. It's a little bit easier to maneuver. And so when we see opportunities to innovate and when we see opportunities to make fixes in the system, you know, we can call a meeting, get everyone in the same room, talk about how we're going to do it, and then a month later or 2 months later, we can do it. And that's what we do with our jail diversion program, which is a district court program dealing with nonviolent misdemeanor offenses where mental health concerns are really the focus and what's driving this person into the criminal justice system. So we can work with them and have a personal relationship with the folks at the adult mental health division and be able to call them up and talk to them about particular situations and really work on crafting programs that are designed to address specific programs that we see here in the community. Drug Court is another fantastic example of that. And we're really excited to see where Girls Court goes. Teen Court, something that's been a major part of our juvenile justice initiative on Kauai for many years. And I also do have to say that Hawaii really does a lot right when it comes to juvenile justice, especially over the last few years. And I got to give Judge Browning of the Family Court on Oahu a lot of credit because, you know, we looked at what we were doing, and especially with regards to the Hawaii Youth Correctional Facility, where it costs $200,000 a year to incarcerate a youth, we took a look at it. We took a look at the information from other states. We looked at things that are working. We looked at things that aren't working. We looked at things that are working in jurisdictions that are similar to ours in terms of demographics and crime data. And now, lo and behold, a couple years later, we actually put far fewer kids in HYCF than we used to, and juvenile crime statistics are not worse. You know, we're able to better identify earlier in the process who the at-risk kids are, to work with, you know, talented and committed juvenile probation staff like we have here, and talented and passionate family court judges like we have here, to get them into programming that is going to help alleviate their risk much earlier in the process. And as a result, we're creating fewer kids that are out doing crimes of the kind that make us need to lock them up.
Yeah, and you know, the Quiet Police Activities League is another really good example.
Yeah.
Jazz with John is coming up in 15 minutes at the top of the hour. We have another caller on the air. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Aloha. Aloha ina, aloha kako. I have a question to the prosecutor. I listened to his statement, and he said that he is unlikely to be involved, or actually he prefers not to be involved in political cases.
With sovereignty?
Yes, regarding sovereignty. However, I would like to ask his opinion. How can he explain that? He was the prosecutor in the case when the two signs were removed from the Honopepa Outlook by DLNR, and two people were brought to court. One was dismissed without prejudice. The other one was dismissed with prejudice. But I don't think anyone on this island believes that it was a criminal case. It was a clear political case because these were Hawaiian educational signs. And
okay.
They were on a property that the prosecution could not prove even ownership.
Okay, caller, thank you. I'm going to let him respond to that. And we're getting close to the end of the show, so I've got four calls stacked
short,
up.
Yes.
Okay, so, Justin, do you have...
Sure, and, you know, these were the two signs, I think, that had been installed down by the Honopepe lookout, something to the effect of Hawaii is not part of the United States. The DLNR was predictably less than pleased that these signs had been put up on their property, so they went out and issued some citations. The case went to trial, and the court said, well, we don't know who actually put them there because we didn't see who installed the signs there. So I think the person was found not guilty on that basis, and that's fine. And as far as I know, these signs, I think DLNR still has them, but typically within a window of time after the prosecution's concluded, there would be an evidence release that would go out that would provide that any of the property that was seized could be released to the lawful owner, and it would go from there. So I can certainly follow up on that and see if the letter was sent to DLNR, and if not, why not? But that's a routine thing that we can take care of.
Okay, thank you. Thank
you. Prosecutor, the Attorney General's office said that it is in your jurisdiction. And then according to the sender of the letter to you, Mr. Timothy Oga, you didn't even respond to it, which was sent probably a month ago. So apparently, according to the Attorney General's office, it is in your jurisdiction.
Quick response on this sign, and then I have three other callers holding. So
okay. Sure, yeah. I don't recall having seen a letter from Mr. Ogo, but I'll check.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Aloha.
Sure, aloha.
Thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello?
KKCR, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, how's it?
Good.
I have a much lighter question.
Okay.
So
speak into your phone, please.
Hello?
Speak into your phone, yes.
Oh. Regarding the youth, with that facility coming up behind Halemaʻalu, that youth adolescent center, would you advocate for not going down the traditional route, but instead creating a youth farming center that teaches kids how to engage from everything from seed to building the structures to actually making the labels with computer-generated printouts, and would be able to fund the 3 to 8 beds that are required for the wayward kids that we are shipping out currently and subsidizing. Because this is a real opportunity here. And there's a second part of that question.
Okay, and then I got people holding. So
of the kids that have been arrested or, you know, dealt with, how many of those are violent versus just drug related? And see if there's a high percentage of drug related, this would be a perfect way to get them
active versus incarcerated.
Okay, so let's let him answer those. You threw about three significant questions at him, so let's let him answer.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a great program. Let's make it happen. I mean, we have a lot of opportunities to help our at-risk kids. You know, right now the challenge, of course, is with, of course, how do you fund the facility? I know that the mayor is very committed to putting up the residential facility in Hanama'ulu, and then what form that eventually ends up taking, I think, is still a little bit of an open question. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to do different kinds of programming. Farming would certainly be something that would be appropriate for a place like this, which is still rural in a lot of ways.
And
yeah, I mean, there's nothing but unused ag land around here, so let's find a way to use it.
Thank you, caller.
Well, I know the spot very well, and there's a water source, and I was just seeing if you would advocate for that, and because I would like to support Teresa Koki, who's in charge of that project.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes, and so, yeah, I'm very familiar with that whole thing, so I'm just glad that you responded that way, because that's a positive forward motion. And I feel bad you got some heavy questions today. I'd like to give you that light one.
No worries. I can handle the heavy questions.
I know you can.
It goes with the territory, my friend. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
You're welcome. Hello, Felicia. This is Mageso.
Hi, Mageso.
How are you today? Thank you for a beautiful show today. And thank you, Prosecutor Kolat, for showing up on the show to answer these questions.
Can you turn your radio off, please?
Turn the radio off?
Yeah, because it's bouncing into the...
So, earlier a question was asked about providing irrefutable proof that Hawaii is a legal state of the United States. And the caller asked if anyone was looking into that from the state, and the answer that I heard that no one is involved in looking at that. So my question for Prosecutor...
Well, I don't know who... I don't know what everyone at the state is doing on a daily basis, so I cannot say they are, I cannot say they aren't.
You're saying you don't know if anybody is.
Right, correct.
My question for you, then, is have you yourself personally seen irrefutable proof that Hawaii is a legal state of the United States?
I have seen enough to satisfy myself, yes.
So you could easily provide that in the court of law when that is requested.
I suspect I haven't seen enough to satisfy you, but I've seen enough to satisfy myself.
So you're actually blindly following an assumption, not an actual proof, that as a United States citizen, I and others are required to see.
Like I said.
It is your duty to provide that. My rights under the Constitution are being violated not only as a minister, my God-given rights by the First Amendment, the 4th, 5th, 6th, 9th, 14th, the right to not have my forward progress impeded to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that is, I have 40 violations, over 200 violations, 40 tickets that violate my God-given inherent rights. Is it your obligation to defend the United States Constitution as well as the Hawaiian Constitution in the court of law?
My obligation is to uphold the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Hawaii, and the Constitution of the Charter of the County of Kauai, yes.
And being that I'm not involved in trade or commerce, then under what authority do you have the right to impede my forward progress to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness?
Well, not knowing you, I'm not sure what I've done to impede your forward progress.
Well, I am not in the act of trade or commerce, and the United States Constitution gives me the right to freely travel.
I think we're talking about driver's licenses, maybe.
Yeah, like I said,
the Supreme Court has ruled many times that driver's licenses are not required.
Well, I'm not sure that's actually true.
And I am insured also. You mentioned insurance before. I'm insured by Allstate Insurance. I also went to have a safety check, and I was told by the owner of the dealership that he could not give me a safety check because I did not have Hawaiian plates. So, therefore, I know my vehicle is safe, but you're not allowing me to prove to the public that it's safe.
Yeah, the service
and
stations have...
And I carry all the necessary documentation to prove who I am, but yet you continually harass and discriminate against me as an individual and a God-given, sovereign, God-given child.
So thank you for bringing this up, Mageso, and then, because we're almost at the end of the show. I think you've made your point, and we can take it from here, but thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you, and have a beautiful weekend.
Okay.
Thanks.
He is, you know, bringing up very, very large issues that are larger than local. That's when we even look at our all caps personality, like Felicia Cowden, that's in all caps, like on my driver's license. That is my entity. So my corporate entity. And that is beyond the scope of the regular courts. It's something that's underlying. It's a very big argument.
Yeah, I understand. There's a whole host of different conversations going on with regards to individual identity and signifiers of that identity and what the ramifications and repercussions of different things are. I can tell you that that the law that I am charged to enforce requires that you have a state of Hawaii driver's license if you're going to drive on the public roads, that you have valid motor vehicle insurance. And as long as you have those things, you're going to be A-okay and nobody is going to impede your forward progress.
Right. So the basic question there, and then we're going to go to just a closing remark. The basic question is about really the authority of nation states to impede individual people. So what I'm hearing from you is you're doing your job to the best of your ability within the construct that you're hired to be working within, and your job isn't to be looking at the larger piece. I respect the caller's right to ask the question.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm not nailing you
to
answer it.
And my job is also to do my job as respectfully and humbly as possible. So I don't go out looking to grind on people who have different political views than those that line up with the Hawaii Revised statutes. That's fine. You know, social protest is something that it's a right we all enjoy in this country. If you're going to engage in certain types of conduct as protest activity, it's also well established that there are going to be consequences for that you're taking on voluntarily. You're saying, if I'm going to break what I believe is an unjust law, then the system may try to punish me for breaking that law. And that's just something that that I think has been part and parcel of social change for our nation's entire history.
Right. And people who break, when I went to a couple of his cases, and the courts were pretty good with him, but it is a very difficult case, and I would say I get the point that I see both sides of it. He's not actually out there.
Fight the fight and make the change.
Yeah, he's a vanguard.
Go for it.
Vanguard of change. We are just about, the show's just about over. We are going to have the county council report before Jazz with John. I would like to leave you with an opportunity for your closing statement.
Just want to say thanks again. I always appreciate the opportunity. I'll come on here again anytime. Just give me a call. You know where to find me.
I know where to find you. So thank you so much. This has been Kauai Soapbox, and Jazz with John is up next, and the County Council Report. And it is basically about the budget, and I'm going to be there. The budget is a big deal. People can even watch it. Kauai.gov, if you go under County Council, you can watch it under the live presentations. The budget's a big deal. Okay, that's it for tonight. Thank you, Chief Prosecutor Justin Kohler.
Thanks, Felicia.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of February 22nd. There will be a regular council meeting at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, February 24th. The meeting will be in the council chambers in Lihue. Here highlights from the agenda. The council will conduct 7 interviews with candidates for the various commissions and boards. The director of finance transmits for council information various financial reports for the county. The mayor transmits for council consideration a proposed supplemental money bill to fund a new deputy county attorney position to provide legal support for the Kauai Police Department. That's Deputy County Attorney, Kauai Police Department, legal support, $30,933. This is proposed draft bill number 2618 and is under bills for the first reading. The prosecuting attorney requests council approval to spend $210,716 in federal funds for the Kauai Victim of Crime Act expansion project for the period of July 1, 2016 through June 30, 2017. Under committee reports, the Housing and Transportation Committee received, for the record, a request from the planning director for agenda time to provide a progress report on the ongoing North Shore, South Shore, and East Side Transit Feasibility Study, which examines the viability of expanded local and regional transit service to better serve residents and visitors. The Budget and Finance Committee has two bills on their agenda. The first is Bill Number 2615, adding a new section relating to an assessment cap, and this was approved. The second is Bill 2606, adding a new section relating to a homestead tax cap for home exemption and long-term affordable rental properties, and this was received for the record and is under bills for the second reading. The Committee of the Whole approved as amended Bill 2614, and this is relating to the registration of lobbyists. There are five resolutions on the agenda, and they relate to the confirmation of the mayoral appointments. To view meetings or meeting archives, please visit www.kauai.gov/webcast-meetings. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha. And you are listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, or Kauai's community radio station. And stay tuned for Jazz with John coming up next. Jazz with John is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Coffee Company, Kamau Ukulele, and Tiki Aniki.